It was an old town chateau, vast in its way, but cramped between its neighbors, as if the wings of a sprawling palace had been picked up and stacked within one crowded lot, like building blocks carefully packed to fit back into the box. Rows of arched or pedimented windows had not been altered since the days when architects worked with sketches of ancient temples on one side of the desk and tracings of flowers on the other. The columns, moldings, and tracery were fluted stone, the doors and windows ornamented with ivy fine iron. Double and triple staircases waltzed one around another up the facade, like the petaled fabric of a wedding dress. Humans have decorated things ever since cave dwellers first learned to weave or to fire clay to hardness, gracing a pitcher with figures, a shawl with stripes. I think an ancient craftsman considered each creation a capsule of his immortality. So long as future ages see this work and speak its maker's name, I am eternal. Only in the ages when we slogged through labor eager for our play did we degenerate to mass production and boring houses. The men who crafted Madame's facade made for themselves a respectable immortality. Remember, Thisbe coached, if anyone asks, we got the address from Occam for my security check, and we don't know where Occam got it from. She led the way, the sensei's hand in hers, like the leash of a reluctant pup. She chose well. A servant's stairway, half hidden in a minor street behind the house, one of six, for the mansion was fed by many back ways, like an old rose bush, with far more roots than blossoms. If we just tell them we're looking for J.E.D.D. Mason to ask about the investigation, they'll think we have every right to be here. My mind raced. Threats? Would threats stop them? Would lies? I could tell them something happened, that we had to get back to Bridger. I could tell them Thisbe's bash house was on fire. No, distraction wouldn't work. They had the address. Even if there really was a fire, they'd just come back once the flames were quenched. Cats stay curious, no matter how many die. You want to ask for them directly? What if they're actually here? They're in Alexandria. Eureka checked. If we ask for them, we'll be offered close associates, or at least vague answers. At a place this big, we can't count on the first person who opens the door being useful, like that Blacklaw housekeeper. I wonder what they call them here, Carlyle mused. Call who? J.E.D.D. Mason? This is a private address. Eureka said Dominic and Martin also come here a lot. It might be a Bosch house, or at least the Bosch seems to frequent it. And I'm sure they don't call J.E.D.D. Mason by clumsy initials or titles if this is something like a home. What do you think they call them here? Maybe by their real first name? I could have Occam stop Thisbe, I speculated, by calling and telling him she was about to put the Bosch at risk. She would obey his order. But that would bring her black wrath down upon me, and danger with it, to myself and, more importantly, to Bridger. Was there another way? Thisbe chuckled. Now there's a mystery to rival what's in Cardi's pants. We know the name starts with the letter J. After Martin and Dominic, I bet it's a scandalous old name like James or John. Or Joseph, Carlyle contributed. Joshua. Jean-Baptiste. No, then it would be J.B.E.D.D. Mason. I suppose. That rules out Jean-Jacques, too. The instant Carlyle's foot touched the first landing, his tracker let out a siren squeal, while a cheerful voice rang out loud enough for even Thisbe to hear. This is a friendly warning from the Cousins legal team. Our member is reminded that red-zoned properties and businesses are off-limits. To file for a special exemption for a legal or social service visit, select File. Red-zoned? Thisbe repeated. This... Carlyle gaped up at the building's wall. A side wall, rows of windows, closed with drapes of damask and heavy velvet. This is a brothel. Huh. Her eyes grew wide. I guess it is. Does this mean you can't go in? The Emperor's child frequents a brothel? Should I go on without you? The Emperor's child, who is still a minor, frequents a brothel? Carlyle, Thisbe had to snap. It's no problem for a humanist to go into a red zone. Shall I go on without you? No, I'll just turn my tracker off. She stared, as at an idiot. Won't your police ask questions if you turn your tracker off on the threshold of a red zone? If you need to, we can check into a hotel and you can tell your tracker you're taking it off for a shower. Carlyle shook his head. It's all right. I can get an exemption if I explain that you were going in and wanted your sensei with you. Thisbe frowned. It's that easy? Well, yes. Beware, reader. Beware of dogs and snakes and women when they glare like Thisbe did. Stupid. That's what it is. You cousins ban everything under the sun and then make a million loopholes so no one ever has to follow their own rules. What's the point of having the laws if there's no consequence in breaking them? Carlyle stared, unbelieving, as her tirade left all stealth behind. Thisbe, is this the time for hypocrites, always moralizing about how yours is the strictest law? Dominic Seneschal is a maniac, but at least they picked a law they'll follow, while you all go on about being stricter than a white law and then walk straight into a brothel. Her outburst was surreal. A game. That's what it felt like, as if the two had been playing an infiltration game and Thisbe hit pause, expecting the rules and enemies to wait for her rant as they might wait for a bathroom break or a trip to grab more munchies. Gaping Carlyle still believes the danger and mission here are real. The clearing of a throat interrupted. Can I help you two fine people? The voice came from the window closest above the back door. Here stood a resident to match the house. She wore an antique gown, the skirts vast with stiff frames underneath, while the tight corset exaggerated her sex, the upper line presenting her breasts like a platter of pudding, while the corset's lower edge came to a central point, directing the eye to the spot in the ocean of skirting where lurked her most forbidden part. One could not guess her age beneath the white face powder, two pink circular blotches on the cheeks, sharp lipstick, and of course the wig, a tower of mounded, stiffened curls, with a cluster of feathers sprouting from its peak like a nesting bird. Other faces framed her in the window, and more appeared through the drapes of surrounding windows. Painted ladies like the first, youths with curled ponytails like Dominic's, and younger girls with blushing, modest cheeks tittering at the strangers on the steps, as if they had been the burlesque, and these creatures normal. Are you lost? The first whore invited. In this chapter, reader, I shall call a spade a spade. You'll get back to the river if you head straight that way. No, Thisbe answered. We're not lost. We're looking for, Mason, Carlyle ventured, covering the intentional blurring of the first name by reaching to scratch his nose at that opportune moment. Fast as a match to oil, the name set French gossip exploding across the spectators. Mason? I'm afraid the Emperor just left, the whore replied, hissing quick hushes to the nearby window gapers. Should I get one of his secretaries for you? No, I don't mean the Emperor. Mycroft said they'd be... Mycroft, the whore repeated, her face suddenly light. Oh, bless me, you want the young Master Jehovah Mason. I'm sorry, I'm not used to hearing him called by his last name. Sir Eloise, she shouted toward an upper window. Invité pour Maître Jehovah. Only Thisbe catching him kept Carlyle from falling backwards down the steps. Jehovah? She'll be right down, the whore smiled. Sorry about the confusion. It's not often anyone new comes for the young master. Through the windows, one could track Eloise's approach by the polite, barbed nods of those she flitted past. I was still concocting schemes to stop them. What options had I left? They certainly weren't prepared to listen to my excuses. If I called President Ganymede, he could caution Thisbe to back off. She might listen, but not Carlyle, who teetered now on the steps like a tree half felled in one stroke. Jehovah? He repeated. Are you feeling all right, father? The whore asked, frowning down at the censer through the lipstick which did not so much frame her mouth as mark the twin peaks of her upper lip like two tiny strawberries. You look pale. Do you need some brandy? They're fine, Thisbe pretended, doing her best to prop Carlyle between her body and the dainty banister. Carlyle, deep breaths. The door opened before them now, revealing a tiny creature, fragile but overflowing with energy like a hummingbird. Oh, Evans, this one do it all. She relieved Thisbe at once, tipping Carlyle's full weight onto her shoulders, which, in their tininess, seemed like they should snap. You must come in at once. I'll send for a nurse. Candide! She shouted to a gawking youth above. Cherche-toi l'infirmière! No, it's okay. Carlyle seized the rail with all his strength and tried to stand. I just had a little faint spell. I'm fine, really. Are you certain? Eloise asked. Her face was clean and plain with that natural beauty which makes young princes hunger for shepherdesses, and made Carlyle smile in the moment before he saw her clothes. She wore a shapeless cotton smock, straight black down to her ankles, with a white tabard over the top, and a crisp white wimple covering her throat, brows, and forehead, so not a strand of hair showed through. Though none have walked our streets for 9 generations, how many seconds would it take you, reader, to recognize a nun? There's nothing wrong with that cousin that a little food and spirits won't put right, the whore called down. Eloise, take them through to the Salon Hogarth. I'll send for something. Right away, the nun confirmed. Though willing to let Carlyle walk, she would not release his arm, leading him firmly, like a half-blind great uncle. This way, father. Sister Eloise, not I, made them cross that threshold, though the panic which froze me in inaction prevented me from stopping it. They entered a service corridor, neither wide nor grand, ornamented with delicate moldings and small, wall-mounted chandeliers which sparkled disdainfully with electric light, not quite as rich as candles. The doors along the walls were strange, all different heights and widths, some low enough to make one stoop, others curved or slanted as if they had been cut into the wall at random. The cause was clear when Eloise opened the nearest, for on the other side it was a hidden door, carefully cut to fit the gap between a fireplace and bedpost, so none within could deduce quite where the servants passed in and out. The Salon Hogarth was quiet, with leather seats and a hand-carved lady's writing desk, but dominated by a vast canopy bed and a pair of framed prints. Before showed a gentleman dragging a reluctant lady toward a bed with no little violence, while after had the lady clinging to him in affectionate desperation as he rose to replace his breeches. The pair of images would have been distressing anywhere, but were much worse in a room which was itself a precise recreation of the one shown in the illustrations. Please sit. Eloise poured brandy from a bright decanter, her tabard swaying about her knees like an apron. Here, father, this should give you back some fortitude. She had the same accent as Dominic, French flavoring English as milk flavors cocoa. Drink it slowly. Stop calling me father. I was startled as I listened. I had not thought Carlyle had it in him to make his voice so grim. Is this a period costume brothel? Her virgin cheeks blushed at the word. Parts of the house could be described that way, yes? And you're dressed as a nun? I am a nun, I am called Sister Eloise.